Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everyone, to Blog Talk Radio and the Voice of Change. I'm Sharon Ann Wyckoff, hosting today Sharon Macer. The topic is the truth about depression. Sharon writes about the program today. Depression is a malady of the spirit, from overwhelm, low self-worth, and ignorance. It shows up physically in our brain cells and chemistry, but taking medication while making one feel better will not heal the wound. There are things one can do to make permanent changes for the better. Sharon herself has experienced depression and learned firsthand how to move beyond. She says we can heal and we can help ourselves and each other. Sharon began her spiritual journey with yoga, meditation, natural foods, and nature in 1971. She has since explored many spiritual pathways and religions, including Buddhism, Native American, Judaism, Hinduism, Christianity, religious science, and the goddess. She also has studied transformational use of ritual, oracles, expressive arts, and circles. She has explored in depth the work of modern teachers such as Byron Katie, Leslie Temple Thurston, Terry Cole Whitaker, Marianne Williamson, Marshall Rosenberg, Gay and Kathleen Hendricks, and others. She has her own powerful spiritual and healing experiences and lives from the deepest sense of her spiritual self and divine guidance. She founded the nonprofit Women's School of Healing Arts and Sciences in 1985 and still directs it. She has a master's in women's spirituality and did doctorate work in religion and philosophy at the California Institute of Integral Studies in San Francisco. She would like to help others find more peace, love, and freedom, and the world become a more joyous, healthy, inner, kinder place. So it is with great pleasure that I welcome Sharon Macer to be on the program today and talk about these subjects. Welcome, Sharon.
Oh, hello, Sharon. It's good to be here.
Yes, great to have you. It really is. And I think it's just you're addressing a very, very important topic. I understand, heard a statistic the other day in a class that one out of four people experience depression at some time. So I'm delighted that you're addressing the subject. Can you start by telling us a little bit more about what depression really is?
Okay, yes. I relate to depression from the emotional level rather than the chemical or the physical level. Both are real, but I have come to believe that the chemical is generally the result of the emotional situation. In other words, I don't think we're born depressed. I think we become depressed. Well, some people are born depressed because they've had a pre-birth experience that was very depressing. But in general, but they're together. I mean, the body and the spirit, body, mind, and spirit are all one. So when you have an emotional experience, it will register, it will show up on the chemical level, on the physical level. So depression is physical, but you can work with it on the emotional level, on the psychological level. And on the psychological level, after my own experience and the research that I did on it, I came to see that depression is really the result of a lack of love, a lack of good parenting, a lack of nurturing, a lack of being taught the things that we are taught by our mothers, which are basically how to love ourselves, how to be loving, how to love ourselves, and how to calm ourselves. And that was a very interesting piece of information for me to know, that one of the important jobs of a mother is to teach calming. So when an infant is agitated in one way or another, it is the role of the mother to help the infant overcome that. And if she can't, then the infant is totally at a loss.
And very interesting. Do you feel then that sometimes the cause or the root of depression can actually go back to infancy.
I do, and even before infancy, because that turned out oddly to be my own experience. Not that I was looking for that or expecting it, but when I went back to, just by looking at my thoughts, exploring what was going on in my mind, I was able to go back, my thoughts and my emotions, where I was stuck. It took me back to something that was even before I was born, after 3 months of conception, actually. So that's pretty
oh,
early.
Oh, please talk about that. That's amazing.
Okay. Well, my own experience was, let's see, it's always such a tangled story. It's hard to know where to start sometimes.
I totally understand. I've had experiences similar, so I totally understand. So just, you know, take a deep breath perhaps and just whatever feels right. And if you don't want to share, that's fine too. But, you know, I think it is really interesting for people to understand that there can be experiences even before conception and during in utero that can really affect us our entire life. I think this is a new edge of understanding, and I think it's just very important. So I didn't even realize that your story went back to that time. So I'm fascinated to hear it, if you don't mind sharing.
Sure. Okay, I'm going to back up a little bit and say that
please.
What happened to me was in my 50s, I realized I was totally dysfunctional. I had had a series of relationships, and none of them lasted. I wasn't getting any better at being in a relationship. My relationships weren't getting any better. I didn't even want to continue them, and I didn't know why.
Mm-hmm.
So that aspect of my life was completely dysfunctional, and I didn't feel good about it. That was the other thing. It would be fine if I felt good about it, but I didn't. I had no career that I had things I liked doing, but I had no career. I had no future. I had nothing I was working towards. And I didn't have a home. I was, I never really wanted to be a property owner, but I still kept moving from place to place. So I never felt centered in any place that I lived. So in my 50s, I became aware that I was going nowhere and I was not happy about any of that. So I had to start looking at it, and it took me a while to find processes and things that helped me. I had been classified as clinically depressed when I was in my mid or late 40s. I had gone to my doctor to say, I think there's something wrong with my memory. And he sent me to a psychiatrist and for evaluation, and they said, no, there's nothing wrong with your memory. But incidentally, there's something wrong with your ability to recall things, to bring things forward, which was sort of interesting. It's like I didn't want to remember things. That was kind of an interesting clue. And then he said, by the way, I'm diagnosing you as clinically depressed. Well, I really didn't know how to relate to that information, and I was so depressed that I didn't do anything about it.
Was that kind of a surprise to you that they would use the word depressed in your situation?
Yes, it was,
yes.
Because mm-hmm. my mother had been depressed her whole life and suicidal, but I never thought of myself as depressed. I was like the helper. I was the one who was weller.
Mm-hmm.
I was better off. I was more normal. And in fact, that was really part of my problem, was that there was no space for me to be anything of myself except a helper, as I thought, that was the choice I made. So I was kind of surprised, but I was unable to do anything about it because part of my handicap was that I was not able to reach out for any help for myself or for anything that I wanted. I had a complete sense of paralysis, of helplessness, of hopelessness, and of confusion, among other things, that made me incapable of helping myself, of reaching out for therapy.
Yes.
It was
be such a difficult place to be in, and especially with the situation of your own ways of not being able to reach out.
Yes, I was stuck. Mm-hmm. It was like a catch-22.
Yes.
So it wasn't until my mother had had experience with psychologists, and it was not very good. She had been in therapy and had Thorazine. She had had shock treatment. None of those things really helped her. Her trips to mental institutions helped her get away, kind of was almost like a vacation, I think, for her in a way, and that restored her a little bit. She would come back, but nothing ever substantially made a difference, and some of those things, I think, made things worse. So I was not going to go that route. And psychology at that time was, I think, was fairly undeveloped compared to what it is now. There's a lot more available now. But what I did find was spirituality, and I found spiritual processes. And in my 60s, I began to work intently on using those processes, and that led me back. Those processes activated my consciousness. They intentionally brought things up to the surface. Well, then I could deal with them, and what I found out was the things that I kept going back to were things that happened before I had language. They were feelings, they were experiences, they were responses I have, not to anything I could remember. They were things before I could talk, or people talk to me even, so they were related to my early childhood. And I found out, I know I'm kind of going on, and feel free to stop me at any time.
Oh, I think it's fascinating, though, Sharon, and I'd really, truly, deeply appreciate you doing this, because I really think this is on the edge of what a lot of people don't know, and I think it's just really important to bring this forth that, you know, as a prenate, we do have remembrances. They can be somatic, but there is something there that lives with us. So thank you.
We definitely do. We definitely do. I completely agree with that. I've experienced, and I've read other people's experiences too. So, and speaking about that, when I was in my late 40s, around the same time, my mother died, and shortly before she died, she said to me, "Your grandmother wanted me to have an abortion." And that was the first time
I'd
anything about my life being less than idyllic. Mm-hmm. Because I was also the child, I was a love child. I was a love child for 3 months between my mother and the man she married. She'd been married about a year, was 3 months pregnant, and then my father fell off a two-story roof and became a paraplegic. And
oh my.
That was a huge tragedy for her. And it was even more complicated by the fact that it seems he was an epileptic, and her father had given him a job on a roof, which you don't do to epileptics.
Of course.
And so his family was furious at her family. My mother already was at odds with her mother, who was just kind of a country person who liked to socialize. My mother was very intellectual and educated, had gone to college. And she was just had such a different orientation. And she had her own issues with her mother, because her mother didn't even really want her and didn't mother her.
Mm.
Who knows what happened to my grandmother, why she was the way she was. I mean, how far these things go back, who knows?
They truly do.
They do. They really, truly do. But, of course, we are not going to deal with all that, and we can't. But that's when I began to have the first clues that something had happened in my life that was not this all-sweet Mary Jane, whatever, suburban, beautiful life that I had been led to believe, that I was a love.
Mm-hmm. But it was really a gift that your mother was able to speak up at that time, because it has, you know, led you down a path for great self-understanding, it seems.
Totally. It was a great gift. And yeah. I actually never thought of it in that way, so I appreciate your saying that. It was a gift.
Yes.
It was the first piece of a puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
So it took me a lot of work to uncover the story, and what I found out was, and I had confirmed some of this stuff with the last aunt, who was alive in my family, was that my grandmother had to take care of me, and my grandmother did not want to take care of me. And she physically took care of me, but she did not play with me. She did not relate to me. She did not, could she coo, you know, or play hide and seek or laugh or throw the baby. Or she just took me to her various social events in a little basket.
Mm-hmm.
So, and she knew that I wanted that kind of attention, but she just, she didn't want to do it.
Yeah.
So I really suffered a neglect. I was abandoned and neglected child.
Emotional neglect, that's a huge thing too. It's one thing to have physical neglect, but emotional is another level of that.
Right, and especially because emotions in our culture are so trivialized. You know, they're unimportant. They're, how we feel is made to seem insignificant compared to building buildings or roads or airplanes or cars or computers. Emotions get in the way of our very male-oriented, accomplishment-oriented culture. They're quite put down. So how we feel is not considered important. But it's what we have to live with as human beings, our own feelings.
Absolutely.
So, and the other thing that I found out besides that, of course, was that I realized after I was conceived in 3 months, at 3 months after conception, my mother was depressed for the rest of her life. So for the last months of my in utero growth, I was surrounded not by loving pets or by nice music or lullabies or talks to the new baby that's coming, but rather by total depression and total overwhelm.
Ah, wow.
And what I discovered in my research when I was reading a book by Arthur Janoff, a psychiatrist, called The Biology of Love, that he shows pictures in his book about how brain cells are sort of deformed, really stunted, by a lack of love. That the cells do not actually grow as large, as plentiful, or as, they're not as productive. And so the human being does not have the capacity for resilience that a loved child has. So that was very interesting to me because I could relate to the symptoms. Like the symptoms, he said, are, one of the symptoms is poor ability to plan. I have a total, that's very hard for me to plan. And another symptom was an inability to think abstractly or linearly, really. And less self-control. And I notice I have less self-control. When I go to the grocery store, I want to touch the fruit, you know, I'm not as good about, well, don't touch until you buy it. You know, I attribute that to a lack of self-control. And so there are certain symptoms that are associated with this brain diminishment or, you know, lower quality of your physical quality of life, your physical existence, which again goes back to the physical and why the chemicals, why we have to add serotonin and dopamine, because we don't have those. And that's fine, you know, but again, it doesn't really, you can't go off the medication. Well, if you go off the medication, you go back to ground zero again because you haven't dealt on the emotional level. And when you deal with the emotional level, you do grow, your cells actually do begin to grow again.
So you actually can regrow those cells as you work with these ideas.
Yes, because the mind and body are connected. So as you free cells, now you may never achieve what you would have achieved if you'd been originally a very well-loved child, but you can. I've experienced improvement.
Mm-hmm.
And when I get support, it goes even faster.
That's so beautiful. So do you actually believe that, well, you probably don't know, but do you, if you're working with someone, and I, you know, you do classes and work with private sessions, Do you take people back to their early years so they can see if there's something there, or do you just really work with what is happening in their life at the present time?
I work with the present time.
Mm-hmm.
And present time reveals past. But I work with present situations. Mm-hmm. And if we have time, maybe I can explain, you know, I can give an example of how one way I would do that.
Mm-hmm. Certainly, certainly. Well, I think your story is just fascinating, and I just so appreciate you bringing it up that, you know, we really do have those feelings and somatic experiences at an early age. And I commend your research because this is really just such an important topic to adjust, to address, and it seems like you have really gone back to the roots of it.
Well, I used myself, I have to say, as my own laboratory material, you know, and did reading, which gave me additional information, and all of this is out there, so it's available to everyone, and it's at your local library. These things that are available to people are virtually free, and they are things that you can use. The tools that I used and that I teach other people to use are tools you can use anytime, any place. The most equipment you would need is maybe a pencil and paper.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't cost anything, and they're available as needed, and I think that's wonderful.
Oh, absolutely, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So what is your experience with medication? I think you just touched on it. Can you just talk a little bit more about the aspect of medication with depression?
Well, I think, you know, I probably said a lot of what I have to say about it, which is that medication, there's all kinds of medication. There's also herbal things that you can take. But medication, people ask me if I'm opposed to it. I did not take medication myself. I took Prozac for about 2 days, and then I said, no, I don't want to do this. I knew for myself that I did not want to mask anything, that I would never find resolution if I started just going on business as usual and didn't figure out the cause or what kept stirring this, you know, what kept creating it. So and I don't criticize anybody for taking medication, because who wants to feel bummed out all the time? But the medication will not expose the roots, and it will not change anything. So you're kind of at the mercy of medication. And I personally don't like that. I want to be in charge of myself. So I always recommend to people that they do the work, the emotional work, that can give them the true freedom that they can have and can open up the doors so they can be whatever they want to be in life. Because beyond coming out of depression is finding true joy in life. And you really can't do that if you're stuck on medication.
Well, I certainly hope that toward the end of the program, and I think we are going to have time, that you can maybe share some of the things that you do with individuals to support them moving beyond that. We have just a few minutes before we're going to take a musical break, so I wondered if you can address the question you talk about. How does it service? How does depression service?
Well, I've come to understand through spiritual work, really, that all the emotional upsets that we have are here to service. They are opportunities for us to get clear about who we really are and what we really want, and to get rid of the things that are obstacles to that. So depression, in a way, is a big message to say, hey, something's not right here. Let me find out what this is. And that requires a lot of faith in oneself and a lot of trust. And so it's not so easy to do. But it is a message to us that we are out of alignment with ourselves, with our true nature, with who we really are and what we really want. Because we all have the birthright of being happy and being joyful and being enjoy being alive.
That absolutely is beautiful.
I thank you, or good, or I'm glad to hear that.
It's our natural right,
I believe.
It certainly is. It certainly is our right, and nothing can take that away from us. And I'm just delighted that you have brought this up, that you know things that can happen many years earlier can really affect how we look at, you know, think today, and that you have ways of working with people to do this. So after we come back, would you be able to maybe give us a experience or two that you actually use with individuals?
Well, I certainly can describe what I do, and or some
All right.
of what I do, and then we'll see what happens.
Excellent.
Okay.
Excellent. Okay, well, we're going to be back in just a few minutes with Sharon Macer, who is talking about her experience with depression and how you can move beyond depression. We're going to be listening to a musical selection here, and this is by Jeffrey John Whitebear, Creating a World. We'll be back in about 2 minutes. Enjoy.
I've lived on this land called America. My parents taught me how to be a good patriot. 45 years I've lived on this sacred land. I learned the language, learned the way, learned some fun of the history too. What I wasn't told as I was growing up was all the cause for me to be here. Well, I'm not saying I need to lay any blame. I'm not saying I need to feel any guilt. Right here and now, I'd like to proclaim, we are creating a world where our people are loved. We are creating a world no longer run by fear. We are creating a world where our beings are held with the sacredness of love. Newborn child. Well, I've been hearing about this place called Afghanistan. Sounds like a very different land, don't you know? One man is a terrorist, or is he a patriot? Depends on which side looking from. But we're all made out of the same earth, water, and air. Sun and spirit, all is fair. We all are made of love, that's true. We all are made to feel, we all are made to heal. We all have a unique gift of a mystery to share. So let's share. We are creating a world where our people are loved.
And that was Jeffrey John Whitebear, Creating a World. You're listening to The Voice of Change, and I'm with Sharon Macer today, and we are talking about the truth about depression. Welcome back to the show, Sharon.
Thank you, and I really liked the message of that song. That was great.
Mm, wonderful.
Yeah.
So can you tell us a little bit about what you actually do with individuals to really support them in moving beyond depression?
Well, yes, and my work is evolving, so I'm finding more and more interesting ways to work with people.
What a gift that is.
It really is, and it's rewarding to me. It's a gift to me, actually. Like lately, I've been exploring working with art more, and I find people really like that. But basically, I have about four different kinds of tools that I work with.
Mm-hmm.
Two of them, well, let's see. I have a couple forms of inquiry. So inquiry serves to bring things up, like what you really think. And they're very simple tools, and they ask very simple questions. But they ask questions that cover the top and the bottom, so to speak, and the left and the right. In other words, the questions are very holistic. They end up giving you a very whole picture of yourself. And they're related to things like what you get out of doing certain behaviors and or what you don't get or what the benefits and what the disadvantages are and what happens if you look at things a different way. So another one of the techniques is what I call reversals, and they have to do with just being open to look at opposites of what you think. And this is very telling. You might always think your whole life, I can't do this, I can't do this, I don't know how to do this. Like, say a particular thing is, I don't know how to find the career that I love. So suppose you reverse that thought and say, I know how to find the career that I love. Just opening to the thought that something is possible one time will now give you choice about how you think about that situation or that issue for you. And you never can quite go back to that rut that you were in before. You now have choice about how you think about something. So I find reversals are very powerful. And then to support the reversals, there are some fabulous affirmation techniques. There are about four that I happen to love. And some of them you can do with pencil and paper. Some of them you can do with a friend. They're fun to do out loud. So those are some of the things that we practice. And people end up having their favorites and find maybe one particular that they do more often, but they have a kind of toolkit here. And then there's also working with art, journaling. There's working with the body, with writing or with artwork or with ritual where you do a symbolic action. You actually, like you might get it, take it and... Once I had the sensation that I was really stuck and I needed to break the way I was looking at things, and I actually bought a jawbreaker and went and got a hammer and hammered the jawbreaker into the
ocean. That would be fun.
In the ocean. And so that was a symbolic way of changing my attitude, a physical act that symbolized a change in my attitude. So those are some of the ways. And then another way that I work that's really fun is through visualization. And there's certain visualizations that are really powerful. Some of them have to do with forgiving other people, but really, ultimately, I found the most important thing is to forgive myself. That gives me freedom. That unlocks me. Forgiveness for not loving my mother. Forgiveness for being angry at someone. Forgiveness for being short-tempered. Forgiveness for not realizing I had another choice. Forgiveness for getting stuck in the way I was looking at it. When I don't forgive myself, I get stuck in being angry at myself, and then I continue the whole thing of self-hatred and self-criticism that originated, you know, you asked me the causes of depression, and I know I talked about that a little bit, but a lot of the causes of depression come from being heavily criticized, being shamed, or being guilt tripped. Shame is about who you are. So when I'm ashamed of you. It's like you as a person, I've just totally now wiped off the planet. You're no good. You're bad. How do you? And then you are manipulated into behaving in ways that other people want you to behave, and so you're trapped, and you can't find your true self, your true joy. You're trapped into becoming a robot. So, and that again leads us to our immaturity in handling emotions. Like when we get mad at something for what they do, do we lay a trip on them and criticize them that they're bad, that they're wrong, rather than just I'm upset. This upsets me. I'm angry that you do this. It has nothing to do with judging another person. It's just an expression of my upset, leaving the other person free to decide what they want to do. I don't know if it's apparent, but there's a very subtle but powerful difference in being shamed or being made to feel guilty about what you do. Shame is about who you are. Guilt is about what you do.
Absolutely.
And somebody responsibly expressing their upset about what you do. So those two things, and lack of love, which shame and guilt are lack of love, being overwhelmed, being in a situation where you're just overwhelmed by the difficulties so that you feel so incapacitated, you feel things are hopeless, you feel things are helpless, and those come from childhood situations, really, when you are hopeless and things are or you are helpless, things are hopeless. So, and then the whole thing leads to confusion. So being overwhelmed, being confused about your what you want and the rightness of that, being shamed, being made to feel unworthy, undeserving, those are the causes of depression. And they can be undone. It's something that can be changed. So
that is wonderful news, and it's also wonderful to hear you say that, you know, even though these acts have taken place many years ago, the tools that you use with someone today can truly make a difference, as they have with you,
mm-hmm.
with yourself.
Yes. So, yeah, it's difficult to give an example of using these processes with I can share processes that I've gone through, but, you know, it's very personal and very individual. So
what comes up during the session probably will be what you use to decide what avenue to move forward with an individual.
Right. If they need to make a decision about something, if they need support in moving forward, if they need to get unstuck from forgiveness, those are different, you know, they invite different tools to be used.
Mm-hmm.
And I can give you a kind of example of something I did with myself fairly recently.
Certainly, that would be
that
wonderful.
Helpful?
Sure.
Okay, well, I was dealing with my own issue of self-worth, and I have to say that after a year of concentrated work, that's very strong. Most people do not do that. Some people do, but, you know,
mm-hmm.
I worked every day for a year. And then after I did that, I realized I wasn't depressed anymore. So
mm-hmm.
It was after the fact. It wasn't with intention that I set out to do this. I just knew that there was something in for me to gain from doing this work, and that I felt better every time I did it. And it was kind of like unpeeling the onion, like every time I did a process, which I would do two or three, sometimes four a day, each process took off one thin layer of the onion. And finally I was like back to myself. You know, I felt not so burdened and not so heavy, lighter and more open and free and more confident or more positive about life. So it took me a long time to do that, and it was bit by bit. And then I still had to go out and deal with life from this. It was kind of like being back to an infant, because I wasn't. An infant was where things went wrong with me. And so that's where I ended up starting over again. And I went out into the world and I went back to school. And that was a very satisfying process for me. I really enjoyed my education. I enjoyed the work that I was doing. I enjoyed the camaraderie school. I liked where it was taking me. That was very successful. After I did that, which was a couple years, I thought, well, maybe I'm ready for a relationship. And I got involved with somebody, and that turned out to be a disaster. So that revealed to me that I had more work to do in that area. And I did. I spent about a year working on myself in relationship. And I got to a place where I felt the cravings that I used to have for relationship, I realized were cravings for unmet love from my mother. Because once I satisfied those, once I learned how to love myself, once I learned how to take care of myself and nurture myself and calm myself, I no longer had the cravings that I originally had for a relationship. And I began to see that, oh, I'm the kind of person that really doesn't even want a relationship. I'm really happy by myself. And I could never have understood that before doing all this work or been aligned with that.
Mm. What a joy to hear you speak about all this work that you have done, Sharon, and the results that you have gotten. It's just truly remarkable.
Well, I'm really thrilled. If anything that I have learned or gained from and that I can share with other people helps other people, I'm overjoyed because, as you said in the beginning, 1 out of 4 people are depressed. About almost 20% of the population I've heard take antidepressants. And there are a lot of people around that are depressed that don't take antidepressants. So depression is huge and really has to do with our culture, our cultural attitudes, the immense freedom we have now. Like, people used to suffer things that we suffer, but they had a structure. You really had limited choices. You know, you became what your father was or your mother was. You know, you became a carpenter like your father was, and you worked for the family. But those structures have all broken down, so we're all kind of footloose and don't know quite what we want, and we've been taught that caring for ourselves is wrong. So we're impeded in the very things that we need to do to find out who we are and what we want to do, who we are to become in this planet. And we're struggling as a culture to find those things. So those are the kinds of things that my work helped me to do.
And how can people reach you, Sharon, if they would like to?
Well, they can reach me. I have a website called truthwork.net, and some of this stuff is not on it, actually. A little bit is, but my contact information is there, truthwork.net. And my email address is Sharon_Maser, M-A-S-E-R, at sbcglobal.net. And I will give out my phone number because maybe somebody can only get me that way. It's 707-827-3393. And I do teach people how to do this. I have a class coming up in April, and I do give talks. And so I'm happy to provide that. That should be on my website soon if it's not. But then the one after this is in Santa Rosa at the Cottingtown Whole Foods on April 11th at 6:30.
Okay, April 11th, 6:30, Cottingtown at the Whole Foods.
Right. It's
excellent.
Oh, 11th. Did I say 11th or 12th?
11th.
11th, Wednesday. And a class, I'm starting a class on the 17th on a technique called polarities, which is one of the reversal things. And I teach it first because it makes you feel really confident that you can get out of your funk. I get out of my funk. So before we start doing some things that might open some wounds, we want to have a way of getting out of any blackness we might feel. So that we can feel strong and capable. We have some control over the situation. So that's
what a gift this is.
That's the tool I'm going to talk about there and teach there. The starting tool is called Polarities, and it's by a spiritual teacher, Leslie Temple Thurston. And it's in a book called Marriage of Spirit. So one can find her book, and read about that technique. I've simplified it a lot, but basically that's the technique. Two of her techniques I used, polarities and squares. So I teach people how to apply it in a much simplified way, so it takes less time, it's more direct, and it's useful on any topic that you, any issue, whether your things are about relationship, about self-esteem, about career, about money, about whatever the topic is, these tools are universally able to be helpful.
Wonderful gift. So we have just a few more minutes left. Is there anything else that you want to address or perhaps go over?
Well, I want to make a recommendation of a book, and I can share a short visualization that I've done.
Excellent.
Couple minutes. So I will just say I was working on my sense of worth because I felt not, I just didn't, it was about receiving. It started off with money, actually. So I did a visualization with myself where I go to my safe space, and then it led me down to a cave, and in the cave there was a fire. It was like a forge. Like people were working, and they were making jewels. And I was standing apart and just watching. But I knew I wanted to be part of it. And a message came to me. It says, you can't be. And I asked why. And the message was, because you don't think you are. So the message was that I was limiting myself by my own thoughts. I was stopping myself from being part of this, whatever was happening in this room where things were being made. And what was being made was jewels, actually. So I said, well, I want to change. How can I change that? And this is all in a kind of, you might call it a light trance. You know, it's a visualization thing. It might be the same as hypnotherapy. I'm not sure. And so I said, well, how can I change? And then I've got this message. You know, you're stubborn, and you don't think people can help you. And you have pride, and you're scornful, and you keep yourself separate. So you have to learn to see that other people have things to offer you, to give you. And that's when these jewels started to appear, like rubies. And I was given a basket to hold. And in this basket, the jewels started pouring into this basket. And what I realized was the jewels were the things that people, they were other people's offerings in life. Like you, what you do with your radio show. And your positive, open attitude, and you're wanting to serve people. That's a jewel that, in this case, I have allowed myself to receive because I'm here. But there are other people that have jewels that they offer me that I haven't been so open to. And if I just do open myself, I will receive a lot more, and things will happen more. So,
and then you share your jewels as you receive.
I do, yes. And all this came to me through, you know, and I had an image of myself and this forge and the basket and the jewels through visualization processes and my asking the questions that I wanted answers to. So this is a very easy process. You could do this on an airplane. You know, you can do this in a cafe. If you feel stuck and you're, you know, you can do this quite easily. So this is one of the techniques that we practice.
Oh, that is such a gift. I just love color. And as you know, you're talking about the jewels. I see, you know, red ones and blue ones and green ones. And what a beautiful visualization. What a beautiful gift that is.
Mm-hmm. So, and those things might come to a visualization to you, and they might have a completely different meaning in that case. They might be... It could be anything. Depends on your need and the gifts that are coming to you at that particular time, and they change. So, but if you can do that all by yourself, and that's what I want to teach people, to be self-reliant in that way, to have the tools and to help their friends and their children do these things. So that's the kind of thing I teach, and it's very fun. It's fun to work with other people. The class is also a support group. And, you know, we help each other. We refine each other. And so it's very nurturing. And that is available. And it's a modest fees. And if somebody really has trouble, I'm open to work trade. For there are some people that can't afford anything. And I want them to heal, too. Mm. I've believed, and I want to pass that gift on.
That's
and
beautiful.
I want to
so you are at truthwork.net. We'll just
right.
go over your contact information one more time. Sharon, Sharon, underscore Macer at sbcglobal.net.
Right, and Macer is M-A-S as in Sam, E-R.
Excellent.
Yes. So do I have time to recommend a book?
You do.
Okay. This is a book called Coming Home, Return to the True Self, by a woman named Marcia Nelson, and her name is spelled Martianelson. She's a coach, and she has also done her own work, and she is, this book is a guideline, it's a support system, it's a pathway, it's a map, it gives you activities that you can do. And it explains a lot of things. It's a tremendous support for going forward to find your true self and who you, the light that you want to be on the planet. And I think that's where we're all wanting to go. Well, I hope that's where we're all wanting to go.
Does her work, Sharon, have, does it deal with depression basically, or does it go back to that in utero state? What is the focus of her work?
No, her focus is more about the journey to supportive things about how your personality, for instance, and your true self are not and need not be in conflict and, in fact, should work together.
Mm.
That your personality is not evil, which a lot of us have that idea that it is or that our ego. But our personality is actually here to help us. So she helps us figure out how to align with that. And she also talks about love and self-love and how to love yourself and things about forgiveness and inner guidance, how to connect with your inner guidance, which is the, that's the lifeline. That's the connection to spirit, to our own spirit. And that's why I said disease is, I sometimes say it's a disease of the spirit because our spirit is so weighed down that we can't stand up and be joyful. Our spirit is meant to be joyful and meant to be playful. So her book has a lot of information about that and about emotions, how emotions help us. And those are things that we have not been taught in our culture, and we need support for that.
Hmm.
I recommend it, and it's on her website. Just go to www.marcianelson.
Uh-huh. And did you say that was Martin Nelson?
Well, it's Marcia, M-A-R-T-I-A.
She all right.
Unusual way of spelling her name.
Yes, she does. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Sharon, this has been just a fantastic program. I just really commend you for stepping forth with this work and really sharing it, sharing your own story and then how you have gone forth to help others with this very important and very difficult subject of depression.
Well, thank you for giving me the opportunity. It really is rampant. It's an epidemic, actually, in our culture. And there's not very much out there that is. There are some books on healing naturally, and you can find those online. But there's not very much in this realm, like of applying, of getting support for your emotional needs and your psychological self. So I feel like this is kind of new work in a way, or presented in a new way to help people. And as there's been depression in my family, I feel, you know, a certain, like, in a way, you know, it's a homage to my mother that I teach people things because out of what she bequeathed me, the good and the bad, I did learn to overcome what she couldn't. And maybe I can help other people overcome when they're stuck. I hope.
Absolutely. And there is a saying, too, that, you know, as we do the work, we can sometimes heal seven generations back and seven generations forward. So with your approach in that, I think that that's probably the path you're on.
Well, that would be wonderful. I love that. I would be very gratified to do that, or whatever I can do in that realm, I am grateful for.
Well, thank you again. This has been a wonderful program. And I just want listeners to know, too, that Sharon has other programs, and they're all archived at www.blocktalkradio.com/voiceofchange. Thank you, Sharon, so much.
Oh, thank you. And may you have a wonderful, joyful life.
Thank you. And the same to you.
And all our listeners.
We'll talk to you again on The Voice of Change for sure. I'd love to have you back.
Oh, thank you. And I'd be happy to come back.
Wonderful.
All right.
Bye-bye for now.
Bye-bye.
Just want to let you know again, Sharon's contact information is truthwork.net, truthwork.net. And her phone number is 707-827-3393. And again, know that all of our programs are archived at the Blog Talk Radio site, blogtalkradio.com/voiceofchange. And as I conclude the program, I just want to invite you to know that each voice, and that includes your voice, holds a vital and powerful potency for these times on the planet. I invite you to stand up and speak out for right relationships and right action for the highest good of all during these transformational times. Let your voice be a voice of love and light and power. See you next time on The Voice of Change. Bye for now.